Back on the field here with Dan Satori, your host, and alongside the analyst that has been on here for over a year with us, the reason why the show is called what it's called, Back on the Field with Robert Drummond of Syracuse, the CFL, and the NFL, bringing you his expertise and also adding, you know, his thoughts on what he's experienced in life and what he's taken away from the game, as well as what he's viewing right now here on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop shop for all things sports. Rob, how you doing?
Pretty good. How's it going, Dan?
I'm doing well. And first off, with that Clemson game, what were your takeaways from that game? Because obviously you're there in the dome watching, I'm watching. You and I have discussed this off the air. But what did you take away from the game that you thought were, I guess we'll start with the positives?
The positive is that, you know, Syracuse, we really didn't give up. You know, we fought that game, albeit, you know, a losing battle, you know, from start to finish. Glaring thing I noticed was the simple fact of the athleticism difference. I mean, Clemson's way more athletic than we are, you know, and I know it's going to take time. It's going to come with recruiting. It's going to come with us going out there, you know, pounding the pavement, getting the athletes that we need to get from the South to possibly come up here and moving to the ACC, I think will definitely help that out. Another glaring statistic that I observed during the game was the simple fact that I think on offense, we didn't take chances. I think we were very conservative, very stale, very worried not to get beat by a lot of points offense, and it showed. I think on defense we took too many chances, and the young secondary really got, you know, exploited. We gave up a lot of big plays. You know, and by we, I mean former Syracuse University football player myself, so I can call myself we when it comes to that Syracuse University football family. But I think if you take away a lot of the big plays, a lot of the deep plays, and we just stay back in secondary and play conservatively on defense, I think it's a much closer game. But I think eventually, in the end, they do win because they were the much more talented team. But the positive thing out of that game, it's hard to take a positive out of a loss, but it's the simple fact that we can play with the big boys. We may have gotten beat as bad as we did, but you know what? We stepped up. We didn't cave. We fought till the end, you know, and that's promising for this team.
I think, you know, and you saying that, playing with the big boys, Taj Boyd and the Clemson Tigers had gone 187 straight pass attempts without an interception. Mm-hmm. Syracuse hands Taj Boyd his first interception of the season. Mm-hmm. Almost 200 times as you're throwing that ball, and Syracuse is the one to take it away. And I think that says a lot. I think Julian Wiggum stepping up as a corner in the absence of Brandon Reddish has put him in a place with Keon Lynn being out for the season that he's now in that starting three-man rotation. He's one of those guys that Schaefer is trusting in more and more. Two games, two interceptions. The running game, something that you're used to at Syracuse, to look at a loss and see that there was 323 yards gained on the ground by Syracuse, I think says a lot. And it's something that has been on my mind since this move to the ACC, when I went to the ACC football media days down in Greensboro, and the conversation was, this is a passing league. Taj Boyd is passing team with Duke, with David Cutcliffe, who is close to the Mannings and everybody that he's brought up, that he's a guy that you're going to get out there with Boone and try and pass the ball. And what about Florida State and their passing ability? And then you look at a team like North Carolina, and the conversation kept continuing in the direction of, how do you defend against a team that's going to pass for 400 yards, for 500 yards? And all I kept thinking in my head about Syracuse was, how are you going to defend against a team that can run for 200 yards, 300 yards? And it was all a thought until the actual game is played, until Syracuse is actually out there on the field. To see them out there and go up against the Clemson, number three team in the country, and get 300-plus yards on the ground and get 100 yards simply off of two runs, the only two touchdowns they had with Jerome Smith and Prince Tyson Gully. You have 66 yards, 48 yards. They already were over 100 yards on two plays. And those were the two plays that, you know, you talk about Clemson breaking it wide open for wide-open passes. Syracuse broke out into the field on these runs and were wide open, outran everybody. So I think that, you know, a lot of people take away from this game was 49-14. Clemson made these huge plays. They scored in 38 seconds. They scored in 52 seconds. But Syracuse had positives in what they were doing with the rushing attack. And I see this, and I saw it before it happened, as a telltale sign of the season, that they can attack you on the ground, mm-hmm. and they can stun this ACC, at least right now initially, to say, yeah, you know what, you're used to passing, your secondaries are good, you're used to dropping back, you're used to picking up in coverage, but how are you going to defend against the ground? And I truly believe that Syracuse, right now in their infancy in the ACC, should pound it on the ground, because I think that if you attack them there, that could pay dividends for the Orange. And maybe it's not wins right away, mm-hmm. but I think it's a message.
I think, in all honesty, that running the ball for any team establishing an identity. Syracuse pounded the ball, you know, against Clemson. They did very well. You know, they've got a slew of running backs in the backfield, a stable of backs. I said, very talented. You know, very all-purpose. You know, you have your power back, you know, you have your scat back, you have your receiving back, you have your slasher. You know, so they have a stable of backs back there that are very, very good runners, are capable of running. For the ACC to have an identity as a passing league, that's not good, because at some point you're going to need to run the ball, you know, to win games, because running the ball controls the clock. Passing the ball does not. You know, as I said before, Syracuse had played conservative on defense, you know, and basically had them have long drives to where Clemson would have made mistakes or turned the ball over or went 4 and out or 5 and out or 6 and out. With that running game, with that running attack, you know, this might have been a game. It turned out to be a game. It may not now, it may not next year, it may not the following year, but eventually that's going to catch up. We have a strong, stingy defense that plays conservatively and keeps a strong team like Clemson in front of them, and a strong ground attack that can basically ground the ball out, you know, or break long runs, you know, or score points that way. It's going to be interesting from Syracuse going forward. The simple fact that they can run the ball as well as they can right now against a number 3 ranked team in the country, you know, is a good sign for Syracuse, and a good sign for things to come.
And I see that too, because when you see Clemson, they score off of the fact of catching you off guard, hitting you quick. They started a game like they were playing on a game-winning drive.
Correct.
Taj Boyd opened up that game 3 plays and already a touchdown to Humphreys. That game was begun by Clemson as if they were already in momentum, already in the heat of the game. We're in the fourth quarter. That was the type of game that they're playing. But you saw with Syracuse, not only could they run the ball, but they defended well against the ball.
Correct.
And I'm a believer that if you have the talent on your team on one side, it makes your other side better, because you have to practice against that. And I think that Syracuse's defense stopped Clemson's run more often than not, and you could see the disparity between passing yards and rushing yards because of the fact that they have to practice against Jerome Smith and Prince Tysegali and George Morris and Devontae McFarland. I'm a believer that practice against your ones, either side of the ball, mm-hmm. is going to challenge you to a point where if you don't have that on the team you're playing on Saturday, then you have the advantage. And I think Syracuse showed that, hey, we got to go up against these guys, this stable of backs, like you said. And I think that that's what helps them, is that they're going up against talent that's at this level, and not down at the other level where Clemson was.
You know, that's funny you should say that, because back when I played, because normally most colleges and universities, the starting offense practices against the second team defense, and vice versa. You know, the first team defense practices against the second team offense, or they practice against what's called demo, demonstration squad, where guys are not going to play or really not going to have the talent level as the starters. Back when I played in Syracuse, when we were a dominant team, you know, in the late 80s, we'd say, Coach Mack, you know what, we want the number 1 defense to practice against the number 1 offense. You know why? Because it's only going to make us better. So I was going out there, I was practicing against, you know, the Marcus Pauls, you know, the Chris Ingrams, you know, the Terry Woodens, the Ted Gregorys, the Tim Greens, all the starters who went out to the pros who were the first team defense. We would practice against them because, you know what, it made us better. And it did make us better as a team. Whereas now, if I'm a recruit, as I said before in the beginning of this podcast, you know what? Recruiting. If I'm a recruit and I'm sitting out there and I just see Syracuse get torched for so many yards through the air, but they played stingy on defense, you know, their run defense, you know, I'm like, wait a minute, I can go to this program, you know, and definitely make this program that much better. Now imagine me being someone from living in South Carolina and saying to myself, wait a minute, Clemson didn't recruit me, or I wasn't high on their list, or they didn't offer me a scholarship. So now Syracuse is my second choice. It may be my second choice, but I'm going to go to Syracuse now as a DB with a chip on my shoulder. So now these are the type of recruits, or these are the type of kids that we're going to get as far as recruits. It may not be the first choice of Syracuse, but the first choice of one of these highly rated schools. But you know what? You need to start somewhere. And eventually that's going to trickle down, and that's eventually going to allow us to be back in prominence and get these top-notch recruits who have a chip on their shoulder coming in, because that's what you want.
When you see that, and you bring up a good point because of the fact that Syracuse has that, when you look at the linebacker core, they've already recruited for the future. They're bringing guys in. They have multiple players coming in. They've shown success. Cameron Lynch has come up. Marquise Sproul is better his second time around at the mic. Dyshon Davis continues to play well. Josh Kirkland and Luke Arcenega coming in relief of some of these guys in rotation have shown that they can punch in the mouth, and this is their first year, both of them, at Syracuse. So when you have that, and then you have your front line where Bromley was getting after Taj Boyd and Micah Robinson and John Raymond, these guys that are attacking, when you have all of that and the growth of Ron Thompson, who repeatedly, Scott Schaefer is saying, this is going to be a good player. This kid's going to be a good player. And keep noting the fact that this is his first year on defense. He's going to make it happen. His first year in college on defense. So when you see that, the questions come in your secondary. Well, Keon Lynn has had probably the best in the last few years, the best performances, but he's not there. Mm-hmm. Brandon Reddish has some good moments, but he's learning. Julian Wiggum has come on pretty fast. Rashard Anderson has struggled on his side, and he's shown that he can develop in speed, and he's shown that there are times where he has good plays, but typically he's the one that's left chasing a guy. Mm-hmm. So you come onto a secondary that's trying to still find their identity. The linebackers seem to have one. The line seems to have one. But the secondary is saying, okay, who are we? What's our mission statement? What do we stand for? And I think if you're a DB that has the opportunity to come to a team like Syracuse, think about that. I can go to a place that's already defined, which I understand why that's attractive. Or, like my father always told me, you have it inside of you, son, to not go to a place that's already established, mm-hmm. but to establish something that's on the verge of breaking down. And if you go to Syracuse, not necessarily on the verge of collapsing, but if you go to Syracuse, you have the opportunity to go to a building that doesn't have a name on the door yet. Mm-hmm. And you can put a name on the door. And if you're a guy who really believes in what you do and you want to change things and you don't want to go down the pavement, but you want to cut through the trees, mm-hmm. you could build your own message, your own name, your own mission statement at a school like Syracuse.
You know, I completely agree. For the simple fact of it, we used to always say on a football field, you know what, everyone, you can be as great as you can in practice. Doesn't matter. There's no one watching in practice. Now, walk into a stadium that's filled with 120,000 fans, screaming rabid fans, all the lights are on, all the national television audience is on. You know, now what do you do? When that light turns on, that camera turns on, what's happened? Do you become a star or do you become a failure? You know what? And it's like, if you put yourself in an opportunity, you want to be successful. Most guys who want to succeed will go out there, when that light turns on, they'll be the exact same person they practice against. They'll go out there and give 150%. Do you make a mistake? Yes. You learn from that mistake, but you know what? You live to fight another day. You know what? If I could go out there, I'd rather be on the field than on the sideline. So if I had to be that second, third-tier athlete that the school wasn't looking at and didn't accept me, I want to go to a school with a chip on my shoulder. You want recruits that come in with chip on their shoulders. You don't want prima donnas. I mean, your first choice is great, but you know what? Sometimes first choices turn out to be prima donnas and don't want to go out there and work as hard. You want guys, when the game is on the line, who say, you know what, throw me the ball on 4th and 4, you know, late in the Super Bowl or late in the national championship game. You know, if I catch it, I catch it. If I drop it, you know what, I'll live to fight another day. Those are the guys you want in your team, and those are the guys that Syracuse needs to and should start recruiting, and I think being an ACC will get from here forth going on, here from here going forward. You know what, you want the guy, you know, when you're back against the wall, who's going to come out fighting as opposed to turning around. And I think, you know, as you said before, the simple fact of being able to go out there and play in a secondary that's the weakest part of that defense, let's be honest, it is the weakest part of that defense. And if I'm a freshman coming in, or if I'm a freshman on this team, I know all I have to do is just perform and perform to the best of my ability, and I will get on that field one day and I will make a difference. You want difference makers.
Scott Schaefer has gone along the same lines as us, and he mentioned specifically someone that was your teammate. He said, when I'm recruiting and I'm out there, I want the guy that's the Moose Johnston, mm-hmm. the Daryl Johnston, that didn't get any other offers mm-hmm. for Division I-A, mm-hmm. FBS schools. I want the guy that's going to be the person that, you know, we gave an opportunity to, but nobody else did.
Yeah. You know what? You know what's funny about that? That was my whole 85 to 89, you know, the dominant years at Syracuse. That's what we consisted of. Guys who had gotten one scholarship offer, two scholarship offers from small schools. You know, the Notre Dame turned them down. The Penn State turned them down. You know, there were a few of us that had a lot of scholarships from schools. But for the most part, we had a bunch of blue collar guys, kids on our team. You know what? But those are the kids you want, because those are the kids that woke up every morning, you know, 4, 5, 6 o'clock, you know, went to school, or, you know, went to breakfast, went to school, came back, practiced, and went to battle. We fought. We weren't the prima donnas, you know, the high, flossy Lamborghinis in the garage, you know. That wasn't us. We weren't the kids like that, you know. And that's the thing that I think is not just missing from Syracuse, it's missing from college sports. You know, and it's sad to see, you know, but once college sports gets back to that point, I think you'll see a new brand of football. But I think Syracuse needs to get back to that point, and hopefully someday, somehow, that I think is, but I think it's turning, they will get back to that point.
How do you get back to that point in college football in general, away from the prima donnas, when the media is out there more than it's ever been? There's recruiting going on. I mean, I know just in my company alone, from covering the games to traveling to covering recruits from 2014, 2015, to how recruits were doing now that they're on Syracuse, to who's a redshirt that could be this, to who's on the first team, who's on the second team, who's on the third team, who's on special teams. Just my company alone, covering what I have to cover as one human being, and then you look at everything else going on and the bright lights that are on and the TV that's here and the radio station that's here. For everything that a player is going to be around now, on top of the fact that he or she has their friends, has the fake friends, has the real friends, has the parents, have the people in your support system, have your coaches, everybody talking with you and trying to help you figure it out, plus the media, plus these are the schools that, you know, if the ACC calls, the Big 12 calls, the Big 10 calls, the AAC calls, any of these call, and you listen and you say, oh, that's great, but then the SEC calls in the final moment and Alabama calls you. And what I've realized that was surprising to me is Alabama's offered a few kids that I've spoken with who have not even mentioned Alabama as a choice. And so I think that they're starting to turn because they know, hey, that's a number one and I want to go here, or and not even saying it but not considering Alabama. With all of this going on and the environment surrounding an athlete right now in this world that is constant information, how do you get back and do this? I've experienced with a few guys, but how do you get to that point where you're going to be hard-nosed, chip on your shoulder, smack you in the mouth, I just want a chance? I was that kid growing up. You seem like, you know, you were that kid growing up as well, where you just wanted a chance. How do you get those kids to come up to those programs?
It's a million-dollar question. You know, but I think technology, and I think evolution has changed the game, changed the process of recruiting as we see it today. You know, a team like Alabama, okay, if they're not recruiting you, in, you know, in, at the beginning, you know, and all of a sudden they're recruiting you in the 11th hour, you're never going to see the field. So now for Alabama, you're going to have a chip on your shoulder, but you're never going to get on the field, because a school like that, every single time you come up, they're always going to get the top-of-the-line recruit. It's like the thing I told Greg Paulus, you know what, you can go to Notre Dame and be a heck of a quarterback and a heck of a basketball player, but you're going to go to Duke, and I'm telling you, within a year or 2 years, they're going to recruit another parade All-American out of high school who's going to be bigger, stronger, faster, more athletic than you. By your second, you know, excuse me, by your third and fourth year, senior year, you won't be playing. Allah, it's exactly what happened. The schools that can always get the top-tier recruits, not that saying you can't get to that level, will always get them. So there will always be someone gunning for your position who's a top-level recruit who they probably have more liking for than you. So I'm not saying take a school that's a secondary school, but take a school that you want to go to and you want to be the reason that that school changed. Syracuse wasn't that good when I went to Syracuse in 84-85. You know what? They were a good team, but I wanted to be a difference maker in Syracuse. Turned the program around. Started a revolution of teams going, you know, 10-2, you know, we went 11-0, you know, the next year they went 10-2 again, and 9-3, and you know, started a parade of teams that just made Syracuse and put Syracuse on the map. You know, I was a part of that. You know, my generation was a part of that, and I can always be proud of that and say that. There's some guys who go to Alabama, or there's some guys who go to USC, there's some guys that they're just a part of a factory. I wasn't a part of a factory. I was a beginning. I was a generation of something that started something great, and that's something that kids should think about when they're choosing these schools. Just don't go to the school to fit in. Go to the school to be a difference maker. I said that before. A lot of these kids nowadays just want to fit in. Oh, I was a part of Alabama. So what? What did you contribute to the team? You know, just being on a team is not contributing. Sorry, I don't care what they tell you in grade school. I don't care what these coaches tell you growing up. But just being a part of a team is not being a part of a team. What's your contribution to that team? Because your contribution to that team could be the biggest thing and something you can hold forward going forth, saying to young kids growing up, oh, I was part of the Alabama team. But what did you do, young man? Done a practice squad? No, that's not contributing to the team. It's a great, you know, it's a great story, and yes, you were part of a team, but if you were someone who was being recruited highly, I'd have more respect for you if you went to a team, a lower status team, that made that lower status team better than go to a team that's highly ranking and you just sat there and watched the guys who you thought were better than you go out there and play. I mean, it's a bigger dynamics in the world of recruiting nowadays, and these kids need to make a big decision. Yes, it has to be the decision, but be a difference maker is what I say.
Being a difference maker with you Don McPherson, your quarterback. He was honored at the Clemson game to have his jersey up on the rafters with the likes of a Jim Brown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously Ernie Davis Field there, and the memory of Ernie Davis and everything that he was and everything that he could have been and everything that he has become mm-hmm. from the type of person he was. When you see the history and you see that your quarterback, Don McPherson, is up there, how do you react to seeing his jersey, knowing that that was your quarterback?
You know, very, very proud. You know, it was interesting. During the television show I was doing at the pregame show there, and they allowed me to ask Don a question. And I thought about asking him for a long time. But the question I wanted to ask him while we were in college, and the basic question was, you know, I remember being in games, and I mean, I myself as a running back, I had Michael Owens, you know, I had Moose Johnson, you know, I had receivers, you know, so if I made a mistake, I mean, I relied on those guys, you know, so I was like, it's okay to make a mistake. I'm not Donnie, you know, because everything falls on Donnie because he's an All-American everything quarterback. So, I had my scapegoat, if I made a mistake, I asked Donnie, what was your scapegoat, you know, your scapegoat, what made you, what inspired you when you were out there, because you inspired me. And he was just like, you know what, you. And the rest of those guys around me. He said, you know, because you guys humbled me, you guys went out there, worked hard every day, you guys checked me, kept me in check, and you guys worked just as hard as I did. And it took me back a little bit, but I was like, you know what? It makes sense because that's the kind of team we were. We believed in one another, we fought for one another. You know what? When we lost, we hurt one another. When we won, we cheered for one another. So when that jersey went up, you know, everybody out there that was on that field, that was a part of his teams back then, you know what, felt as deep inside about him being up there, you know, as he did. Because, you know what, at the end of the day, it was all of us. Because, as he said, it was all of us who was a part of it. Because we all were a piece of a puzzle that came together that created the greatness that he said, that which is Don McPherson.
When you saw that go up and you see the jersey up there, that was something he said even beforehand, mm-hmm. where he said, it's almost not right that I'm up there mm-hmm. because it's all of us. Mm-hmm. Even though your jersey doesn't hang up there, I know that you're not a person of necessity, of needing something like that. When you see Don's hang up there, to you, is Rob Drummond in remembrance, and Moose Johnson and Rob Moore and all that still, are they up there now?
Just the memories of my brothers. Yes, they are. They're all up there. I see that number 9, and I go back to every single player that was on that team. It's like, you know what? They were a part of that. They were a part of what greatness is, and greatness is that number 9.
That's from Rob Drummond, NFL, CFL, and Syracuse Orange alum, here on Back on the Field on WakeUpCallDT.com with Dan Tatora. We'll be back for plenty more, as always. And, Rob, I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.